Buzzcast, Buzzcast. Buzzcast, Buzzcast.
All right, this is Michael Lehman here again at Mix06, and I'm here with Tim O'Reilly. How you doing, Tim?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. So I guess first big question is, how was it to interview Bill? And from your point of view, how did that session come off this morning?
Well, it came off surprisingly well because I met with him last night to kind of do a little prep work, and he was a little bit cranky. And we were kind of going over some of my questions, and I thought, oh boy, this is going to be a bust, because we were definitely not in sync. Whereas this morning, I thought, you know, we hit it off pretty well and covered a lot of ground pretty well. You know, he's obviously very knowledgeable. Although I have to say, I don't believe that he entirely gets what I'm talking about when I talk about systems that get smarter the more people use them. You know, he kind of kept going back to sort of community involvement. And that's kind of the degenerate form, you know, the explicit, you know, activity of users adding value to the system. User-created content is great and it's important. But I thought some of the examples I gave him from Microsoft, you know, like the you know, the feedback on the applications, you know, where you actually get that data, you know, how do you actually automate that stuff, you know, so it's not just sort of feedback to a manual process, but, you know, the instrumentation of the application. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think makes Google such an interesting paradigm for Web 2.0 is they've actually figured out how to automate a lot of things. You know, they really relentlessly focus on, you know, the application itself gets smarter. And that's really the piece that I think is hard for old line software developers. We're used to thinking of software as an artifact rather than software as an expression of a set of business processes. And as that expression, it's something that's dynamic, that's happening all the time. So, but I still think, you know, it's pretty clear that Microsoft gets just how important, you know, Live is to its future, how this new business model is going to change things. I think Microsoft does have some challenges, though, relative to, say, some random startup, because there's so much to lose, there's so much at risk. And so you have business models, you have customers that you have to take care of. And so one of the things that is, I think, going to be really interesting is how much freedom can Microsoft give to, you know, a new group to go out and just do something really wacky that might grow up into something big and new. Because I think we are at the beginning of a really new world. It might seem extreme to say that, but I really think we're just at the beginning of understanding just how powerful network-connected applications can be. You know, and we have the first generation of those applications ahead of us, but we're really, I'm not even sure we're at the Lotus 1-2-3 stage. We might be at the VisiCalc stage of this, you know, revolution. And just that means there's a lot of internet time ahead of us and a lot of disruption possible.
So how was your session this afternoon? You just had a panel discussion going on just after lunch, right?
Yeah, I think that went pretty well. I mean, we were talking about business models. And I think, you know, one of the things that I would say we're probably not all in agreement. Michael Arrington seems to be focused a lot more on everything's got to be free and interoperable. And I think interoperable, yes, free not. There definitely are, you know, forces, you know, driving towards advertising as a business model, which, you know, suggests that, you know, free is good for a lot of services. And in fact, I know that, you know, the Google guys, that's a lot of how they think. I've been trying to persuade them, for example, in my, you know, I have this online book subscription service, and they're saying, yeah, but, you know, if it's free and supported by advertising, people in third world countries can get the information, you know, and they really are thinking that, you know, free is the way that they want to go. But I actually think that when I look at business models, there's going to be a wide variety. You know, advertising is definitely going to be one of them, but I think subscriptions are really underappreciated. You know, one of the panelists asked, does anybody believe in subscriptions? And everybody was kind of a little skeptical. I said, I believe in subscriptions. Guess what? Every person in this room currently pays for software by subscription. It's called your ISP. You know, and what's more, if you have a you know, a domain name, you're paying by subscription for your host name. You know, so right there, you know, and then we got into Salesforce.com, and, you know, so subscriptions are very definitely a viable model. And then, of course, there's the, you know, people are looking at that with sort of free for some base level, then to upsell. So you look at something like Flickr is doing that. Similarly, we have that with web services, you know, where people, you get a certain amount up for free up to a point, and then you get, you know, rate limited, you know, web services. So I think that you know, we're starting to see the evolution of business models. But the other area I continue to think is under appreciated is just how much the business model is going to be based on the aggregation of data as a lock-in point. And he's skeptical because, you know, he says, hey, you know, look at Navtech, you know, they're going to get, you know, disintermediated. Hey, we're doing it ourselves right now. And I said, yeah, but you have a lot more money than the average guy who wants to, you know, go recreate that database. You can do it, but there's maybe two or three companies who could afford to do that.
So that sounded really interesting. That was the Show Me the Money session, right, that you were doing at 1 o'clock?
Yeah, and I think, obviously, we're still early, and one of the things that we do have to understand is that the money is going to develop over time. You know, when the PC industry started, it wasn't clear what the revenue models were. And they often, there were players who emerged. Sometimes it was temporary. Remember the Phoenix BIOS, you know, mm-hmm. sort of temporary point where somebody was making a fair amount of money. They had a bit of lock-in. They eventually got eclipsed. You know, in other cases, you know, there have been companies that have been able to build enduring businesses, but you don't know that at the beginning. And we don't know who of the many companies that are out here today or will be around. You know, Web 2.0 is its own bubble that's going to burst. But, you know, people forget when they look at the web bubble and it burst and how terrible that was. The same thing happened back with the PC. It didn't mean that the PC industry didn't add up to something. And I think in the same way, all this is very, very definitely adding up to the next big thing in the computer industry.
Now, I know that one of the things that's the way Mix is set up, it's intended to be more of a conversation rather than just a, you know, long-term discussion by people up on the stage. What kind of interesting questions did you get from the audience?
Well, I think there were people who were asking specific questions about their business. You know, we had somebody from one of the Yellow Pages providers in Canada, and it was like, what's going to happen to my business? And I think there are certainly a lot of existing companies that are struggling with questions like that. How is this going to affect me? And that might be entrepreneurs who are looking for the opportunity, but it's also existing companies, you know, whose old business may go away. You know, you're a newspaper. What is Craigslist doing to you? You know, this is a guy who's just doing it for the hell of it. And that's really scary to a lot of companies. And, you know, I don't think we have any sure answers for companies like that other than to say, think about your assets, think about what your customers need, think about the added value that you can deliver. And so I think there are... you know, for example, the Yellow Pages, to that particular example, it's really a vertical search engine. You're okay, well, how can you do that better? And there are, in fact, specific vertical search engines that are taking off and working really well. It's one, a name I can't remember, but it's a company in Buffalo that does engineering search. And we talked about that a little bit. And they basically have a Yellow Pages model because they've got 2 million engineers who are looking for, you know, a motor with, you know, 3/8-inch left-handed Framus. And they have a parameterized search engine that lets you figure out which of the suppliers actually has that. And you go, well, that's a perfect targeted, and then they go collect money from that advertiser for delivering that customer's looking for their specific product.
And that sounds like a more, you know, repurposing the same kind of thing that LexisNexis has been doing for the legal
That's
industry
right.
for a long time.
Yeah. And I do think, though, the other advice that came out was just, was another question about, well, gosh, you know, a lot of your descriptions of Web 2.0 sound like, say, the financial markets. And my response is, yeah, absolutely. They're actually ahead of the internet in a lot of ways in, you know, creating these kinds of systems. You know, my description of Web 2.0 is, you know, delivering, you know, systems, information businesses delivering software as a service using the internet as a platform to harness collective intelligence. And, you know, you go, well, he says, well, aren't the financial markets like that? And I said, absolutely. You know, they just were there first. And now we're seeing that same behavior, you know, move into new areas. And so one of my watchwords is this great line from William Gibson. He said, the future is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet. And one of our jobs in trying to understand what's coming is to look at people who are ahead of us somewhere on one aspect or another of the curve. You know, so I got to thinking about Web 2.0 by studying open source software. You know, but I drew a different set of conclusions from it than a lot of the people who were looking at open source. They were all drawing this model in which, you know, oh yeah, Linux will replace Windows and OpenOffice.org will replace Microsoft Office. And I said, no, actually, the pattern is repeating itself, except instead of having a proprietary software layer on top of commodity hardware, we're now building a commodity software layer, and we're building a new set of proprietary services on top of that. You know, so here's Amazon and Google and all these guys, and all these web companies are building this new layer of proprietary software on top of the commodity layer. And, you know, you guys actually drew the wrong conclusions. So you have to kind of look at a bunch of data and think about what it means. And I think that, you know, we see these long-term trends that we're moving towards a networked world where devices are, you know, connected all the time. We're looking at a world where we're leaving tracks in cyberspace that are increasingly rich and complex and are being aggregated and accumulated. And then we can ask ourselves, well, can we, first of all, see anywhere else where that's been happening? And therefore, can we look there for business models? And yes, we can. You know, so for example, credit scoring. Okay, there's a whole business in, you know, sort of aggregating and reputation.
Right,
so there was
exactly.
A whole discussion there on the panel about, you know, eBay has this reputation system. They just use it for their own system. Could that be a system service?
Right.
And the question is, where will reputation systems come from? You know, there's also going to be reputation systems that end up, you know, we saw Bill talk about this with other people in the presentations about the anti-phishing stuff in IE7, that's going to end up having a reputation service. So, actually that's been around, and hopefully we can do it better, because of course the credit scoring services do a pretty crappy job of it, but they managed to make a pretty significant business out of it.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's just sort of the evolution of, you know, things like attention and then gestures and reputation. We're going to be thinking about all these things that kind of follow you around. I mean, we're back to the sort of metaphorical, you know, I'm going to put this in your permanent file, like they told us as a child in school,
yeah, that's right.
And it's going to carry around with you just like your credit score.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's an example there, but there's also going to be, you know, what's the equivalent of a market maker? You know, what's the equivalent of, you know, an exchange? And then, of course, all the individual sort of services that get offered into this network. I think it's going to be a really interesting time ahead.
Right.
And it's really nice that it looks to me like Microsoft is serious about understanding that we're in yet another revolution. It's a little bit like 1995 and that, you know, getting the internet. I think Microsoft, with the whole Live initiative, really understands that software is changing, and this conference is a reflection of that.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, I've been in the computer business for 35 years now, so I've seen a number of these cycles go round and round, and it seems as if every time somebody says Paradigm X is going to replace the previous paradigm completely, you know, that's always the kind of the wrong decision.
Yeah.
That it may add to it, but the previous paradigms still have places. There are still things that I prefer to do on a command line, for example, as opposed to doing in a GUI. And I still think that there's going to be things that people are going to want to do from a desktop application to continue to use all these services, some when they're portable on the web and some when they want to keep their own private context. What's your thoughts on that?
But it does change the nature of success. You know, if you look at the pre-PC industry, you know, IBM commanded huge margins for hardware. You know, and literally there were situations where, you know, they could say, you may not change this jumper on this board to, you know, because they'd send out these pre-configured systems and, you know, you'd have to pay for the upgrade, and they'd come out there and they'd move the little jumper.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I remember those days.
You know, but it was sort of like they had this amazing lock on hardware. And, you know, IBM sowed the seeds of the end of that business model when they introduced the PC architecture. And that led to a whole set of new business models, including because they did not understand the implications of what they themselves had set in motion. You know, they did this deal with Microsoft, which led to the shift of power from IBM to Microsoft in the industry. And I think we're at a similar inflection point today where the rules are changing sufficiently that it's possible that a lot of things that, you know, were the source of a great deal of revenue are just not going to be. You know, open source is one of the drivers. You know, you look at a company like BDA, for example, you know, they're going to be in trouble. because there's a lot of people who are out there busily commoditizing their business. You know, IBM, I think, has done a good job of adapting to those same challenges because they've embraced an extended open source with, you know, with Eclipse, with WebSphere. You know, they basically have figured out, oh, let's just integrate the best of breed. You know, Microsoft is taking a somewhat different approach, but regardless, you know, a lot of the margin is coming out of that class of infrastructure software, and it's either going to services or there's value being pushed up the stack to these new level of services that are monetizing themselves in entirely different ways.
So you have any final thoughts on the first day of Mix? I mean, is it meeting your expectations?
Yeah, it seems like a great conference. And I think probably the thing I would say more than anything else, more people who, you know, there's a lot of people who don't get just what a great community Microsoft has. And they really need to come to Microsoft conferences to see that there are passionate developers in this ecosystem, just like there are in open source. So whenever I'm out there, you know, you'll see these people ragging on Microsoft. So it's kind of like an us and them mentality. And it's just so wrong, because people who care about building great software occur in every community, and they all need to get together. And this is a great opportunity for that, to mix it up. And you got people in from a bunch of other communities seeing the Microsoft community at work. It's great.
All right, great. Thanks very much, Tim.
All right, thank you.